we're doing the book of Shoftim. We had seen that the Jewish people had sinned. The Midianites had come and trampled them. The Midianites came as a nomadic tribe with hundreds of thousands of camels, and they'd come and devour everything that the Jews would grow. And our story led us to Aviezer, to the Jews living on the eastern side of the Jordan. And there's a young man named Gidon. He's married, he has children, and his father's name is Yoash. And Gidon is helping his father thresh the wheat to try and hide some wheat before the Midianites come. And it's Pesach. So the angel shows up and tells Gidon, God is with you. Now, God is with you, that's an indication that he is starting to have prophecy and an indication that he is starting to have extra bravery from above, that he can lead the people to succeed at war. And Gidon says, if God is with us, why are we in such a lot? Why are things so bad? Now, this terminology that he says, God is with you, he was really teaching Gidon a halacha, that you can greet people with God's name. When we say Shalom Aleichem, what we're saying is peace, which is one of God's name, should be with you. Yes, Shalom Aleichem, we are using God's name to greet a person. God's name, that is peace. So Gidon says, if God is with us, why are things so bad? Last night, my father told me the story of Passover, and he told me the Hallel. And when he told me the Hallel, so he told me all the miracles that happened that we praised Hashem with the Hallel. So why are we in such a trouble now? Why isn't Hashem saving us now? If our forefathers were righteous and Hashem saved them, so in their merit we should be saved now. And if our forefathers were wicked, so he helped them out even though they weren't too pious, so why doesn't he help us out? So where are all the wondrous things? Why don't we get miracles? So God tells him, you did it. With that claim, you changed the tide. And here we see a concept that shows up often in Tanakh. The individual in his prayers and his claims towards heaven can sometimes change the lot of the whole people. And so Hashem tells him, with that claim, I've accepted your claim, and now I'm going to save the people of Israel from the hands of Midian. I'm sending you, you lead the way. So Gidon says, how? We are the smallest family among the tribe of Menashe. I'm the youngest in the family. God tells him the same terminology that he tells Moshe. Ki eheyeh imach. Now the word eheyeh is one of God's secret names. Eheyeh means I will be. Now we know the tetragrammaton, yud, kei, vav, kei, right? That's a term that means, havaya means existence. With the yud in the front, it means active existence. Yud ke vav ke, the tetragrammaton. You guys know what the tetragrammaton is, right? Okay. When you look in the Torah, so Hashem's name is spelled, we have a yud. After that, we have the letter he. After that, we have the letter vav. And after that, we have the letter he again, right? So that's the tetragrammaton. Now, we don't know how to pronounce that. We say that's God's hidden name. But what does it mean? So the root of that is the word hoveh, which means existent in the present tense. Then you have a yud in front of it, which seems to indicate active, proactive existence. And so the simple meaning of that tetragrammaton is that God is proactively continuing existence every minute. That's the tetragrammaton, the simple meaning of the name. So far, we all together? Yes? Yechiel? Yeah? Okay. So then here, God uses a different name, as he did with Moshe. Eheyeh, I will be with you. Eheyeh is all future tense. I will be. And Eheyeh is the name that Hashem uses to indicate a great redemption with an eye to the future, a redemption that will build the future. So, Gidon says, you know what? That's beautiful. That's wonderful. I want a sign. Do me a favor. I'll bring out an offering. And give me a sign. So the angel says, okay, I'm not going anywhere. I'm waiting for you. So Gidon prepares an offering. And he prepares some gravy. And he brings matzah. And he brings it out. And the angel tells him, put the meat and the matzah on this rock over here. Pour the gravy over it. And then the angel extends his staff. He touches the meat and the matzah, and a fire shoots out from the rock and consumes everything, and the angel disappears. So then Gideon realizes, hey, wait a second, that was an angel. So Gideon says, oh no, I saw an angel face to face. I'm going to die. What's going on? So God tells him, don't worry. You're going to be okay. You're not going to die. Gideon sets up an altar, and there he reveals to us God's name, Shalom. He names the altar Hashem, Shalom. From there we have that tradition that one of God's name is Shalom. That night Hashem tells him, your father has been growing two oxen to offer the Baal. Your father has a special altar in honor of the idol Baal. And your father has a special idol called Asherah, a special tree. Go take that tree that they've been worshipping, cut it, take the wood, put it on that altar that they used to sacrifice for the Baal, and there you will set up an altar in my honor. Take the ox that they've been raising in honor of the Baal and offer it with that wood. Now, this was against all halacha. You're not allowed to offer an ox that was designated for idol worship. You're not allowed to use an altar for idol worship. You're not allowed to use a tree that was grown for idol worship. You're not allowed to bring a sacrifice outside of the temple. There are seven halachos that were transgressed that night. But we have a rule that when a prophet is told on a one-time basis, do something that contradicts the Torah, so long as it doesn't involve actual idol worship. Here it involved desecrating the idol. It involved using the idol for worshiping Hashem. If it would involve idol worship, then even on a one-time basis, we wouldn't listen to the prophet. But if it does not involve idol worship, so then we have the term that's called in the Gemara and in Halacha, Hora'at Sha'a, that a Navi is allowed, a prophet is permitted to transgress the Torah if God tells him on a one-time basis, I want you to do this. We would even listen to him if he told us on a one-time basis, God told us to do this. Yes?
Wasn't it allowed to do offerings outside the temple during this time period?
No.
No?
It's a discussion in the Talmud, but it's a very good point. I think at this time they had a central place of worship in Gilgal, not yet Shiloh, it was still in Gilgal. And so it was prohibited. Maybe it was already in Shiloh? Maybe you're right, maybe it was already in Shiloh, right?
When was in Gilgal?
It was in Gilgal when we entered El Tisrael, and then it transferred to Shiloh. Maybe it was already Shiloh. I don't remember the Gemara.
Gotta look.
No. Giv'on was later. The order is Mag Shangai. Midbar, Gilgal, Shiloh, Nov, Giv'on, Yerushalayim. That's the word. So, Mag Shan Gai. That's an acronym that the Tiferet Yisrael writes in his commentary on Mishnah. So that's, so I don't remember how long it was in Gilgal before it moved to Shiloh. Could be it was in Shiloh already. I don't remember. That the Gemara says it overtly, I just don't remember.
But there was no prophet, there was an angel.
Gideon is the prophet. Hashem is telling Gideon, so that's prophecy. Yeah. So that's prophecy. That's nevuah. The Rambam says all prophecy is through an angel. So that's So Gideon takes 10 servants. So now he's going to do a kiddush Hashem, right? He's doing it in the presence of 10 servants, and he does that. Now he was scared, so he did it at night. The people get up in the morning and they see the altar of the Baal was bashed, the Asherah tree was cut down, the cow they've been raising for 7 years has been sacrificed, and they ask, what's going on here? Who did this? So they find out Gideon did it. So they come to Yoash's house, Gideon's father. They say, give us your son, he's going to die because he destroyed the altar of the Baal, he destroyed the tree. And Yoash says, you have to fight for the Baal. Isn't the Baal supposed to fight for you? If he's really a god, let him fight him. The Baal will take care of my son. You don't have to fight for him. My son destroyed his altar, so don't worry. The Baal will fight him. And from that day, they gave him a nickname, Yeru Baal, which stands for Yorev Bo HaBaal. The Baal should still fight him. So obviously, they weren't too scared of this, right? Now, Midian gathered with him the other tribes, the other nomadic tribes that were nearby, and they gathered Amalek, and they're camping nearby. They're ready to enter Israel. And Gideon gathers his family, and he sends messengers throughout Manasseh. Now, Manasseh is a small tribe on the eastern side of the Jordan. And he sends messengers into Israel to the three tribes that were very active in the previous war, Asher, Zvulun, and Naphtali. Zvulun, not so much. And they're nearby, so they're also in danger of the Midianite attack. And Gideon prepares for war. So he's heavily outnumbered. We're going to see how outnumbered he was. And Gideon tells Hashem, if you're really going to do what you told me, that I'm going to win this war, I want another sign. I'm taking a piece of wool, I'm putting it out in the granary here, and tomorrow morning, I want there to be dew on the piece of wool, and no dew should fall on the rest of planet Earth tomorrow morning. So he's asking for a tremendous miracle. So the next morning, he wakes up and he takes a piece of wool and it's soaking wet. He can fill a whole cup of water with that piece of wool. But he didn't stop the dew from coming on the whole world. God was basically telling him, I'm not going to do that. You want the whole world not to have dew because you want the sign. I'm not doing that to the world. So Gideon says, you know what, God, don't be upset with me, but I didn't really get the sign I asked for, right? So before I lead a bunch of people to a suicidal war, technically, he had no logical chance at winning. I want another sign. Let me have another sign. Tomorrow morning, let the piece of wool be completely dry, and everywhere else there should be dew. And that's what happens the next morning. The piece of wool is completely dry. So Gideon takes his men, and we have to wonder, who were these people? Who was willing to go to war when they're outnumbered more than 10 to 1? And they're looking at the Midianite camp out to the north. The verse says they went up on a hilltop, they looked, and as far as they could see, they saw soldiers. Could you imagine such an army? As far as you can see, you see soldiers. And God tells Gideon, you know what, you have too many soldiers. The Jews will think they won by virtue of their might. So announce that whoever's scared should go to Mount Gilead and watch what's going on from there. So 22,000 people leave and 10,000 people remain. And God tells Gideon, you still have too many people. Go down to the water, we'll check them out over there. So they go down to the water and God tells Gideon, you'll see the people. Whoever bows on their knees to drink, don't take them along. That means they're bowing to the water before they drink. Don't take them along. And the people who lean down and lick up the water, they're the people you should take. So he's left with 300 men. There were 300 men left to go to war with. God tells Gideon, with those 300, I'm going to save Israel. And you'll overtake Midian. So they take the food and the trumpets, the shofar, and they send everyone home. And they're looking down at the Midianite camp. So they're on a hill. And the Midianites are ready for war. And as far as they can see, there are soldiers. And they're left with 300 men. And it's the middle of the night. Now, in those days, you couldn't fight a war at night. You couldn't see where you were going. It was dangerous to move at night. God tells Gideon, go down, because you're going to win now. It's the middle of the night. And if you're scared, it's logical you should be scared, right? He's outnumbered about 1,000 to 1, literally. If you're scared, take your lad Phurah with you. You'll hear what they say, and then you'll have strength. You'll go and you'll win. So they go down, and they hear the guards are shifting. It's the changing of the guard. And Gideon hears one guard telling the other one, I had a dream, and in my dream, there was a cake of bread, of barley, rolling into the Midianite camp, and it came to one of our tents and knocked it down. And his friend said, I'll tell you what, that's Gideon, the Jews, because the Jews just brought the barley in their Paschal offering on Pesach. We bring the Omer sacrifice of barley. Gideon is coming and they're going to win us. That's what's happening. And we have a tradition that a dream goes after the interpretation. That's why you shouldn't tell over your dreams, because who knows how they'll be interpreted. Keep them quiet. And if you tell him, then there should be a good interpretation to the dream, because our tradition is that dreams are defined based on the interpretation. When Gideon hears that, he realizes he's going to win. So he comes back to the camp and he tells the people, that's it, we won, it's over. He divides them into three camps. Each one takes a trumpet and an empty earthenware vessel. Inside the pitchers of earthenware, they carry their torches. And he tells them, you're going to follow my lead. They come to the edge of the camp on three fronts. He blows the shofar, and everyone blows the shofar. They throw down their earthenware vessels, so there's a huge noise. They start blowing their trumpets, and they yell out, the sword is here from God and Gideon. And they just stand there. Now the camp wakes up in the middle of the night, and they start running. They're hearing the 300 trumpets on each side of the camp is blowing, and they don't do anything. They're standing there with their torches and blowing their trumpets. Now, the camp of Midian, they don't know how many troops are behind Gideon, but they're waking up to suddenly realize there are torches all around. All they can see are torches. They're in the dark, and on one side they see 100 torches, on another side 100 torches, on the third side 100 torches, and who knows how many soldiers are behind them? They don't know. There were no soldiers behind them, right? Only those 300 men. But all they see is though those are the people holding the torches while someone else is going to charge them. So Gideon and his men are standing there just blowing the shofar, holding the torch. And the Midianites are looking like someone's going to charge them because they must be holding the lights up for someone. And they start running. And as they're running, they can't see in the dark. So everyone's convinced that the guy behind them must be a Jew chasing him. So as they're running, they start fighting backwards. And the guy running from behind, he's no dummy, he's not going to get hit with the sword, so he hits back. And before you know it, you have the Midianites killing one another, and they're running. They're on the run in the dark, they can't see where they're going, they're running. And when the rest of Israel hears that Midian's on the run, so then they join the fight. But who really won the war? Gideon already won the war. And Gideon already prepared messengers throughout the mountain of Ephraim, and he tells them, you guys come down, capture the waterways, don't let them escape. And they capture two of the leaders of Midian, Orev and Ze'ev, and they kill them, and they continue chasing after Midian. Now, they're in the middle of a war, and the tribe of Ephraim comes to Gideon and say, what's wrong with you? Why didn't you invite me to this war? Now you call me? So Gideon sees, they start drawing their swords and they're yelling at him. And Gideon says, what do you mean? You guys did all the great, you were the victors of this war. You captured the two kings. And when Gideon says that, he calms them down. And that's the brilliance of a good leader. Even when he's in the right, he learns how to make the other person feel like they're right and they're good and calms them down. Guys, I'm telling you now, one of the keys to running an organization. You don't have to give in on your position, but you have to give the other person the feeling like they're appreciated, they're right, they're good, they're successful. What did Gideon do here? They're in the middle of a war, and he has a large group of people coming and saying, why didn't you forewarn us? We could have taken them on our own. Really? For years, they haven't done a thing. The Midianites have been coming, and no one was able to stand up to them. So Gideon could have argued with them and said, you guys are crazy. What are you arguing for? Just be happy I'm winning the war for you. He didn't do that. He said to them, wow, look at you guys. You won the kings. You're the ones who caught the two kings. Ah, what am I worth next to you? Did he answer their claims? What was their claim? Why didn't you tell us in advance you were fighting this war? He didn't answer their claim. But he realized that if he touches that point, if he can make them feel like they were the successful ones, then he'll win. And we will see later on that the tribe of Ephraim had a lot of unlearned people, a lot of shepherds who were really common folk who were problematic. They're going to start fights later on, and they're going to pay for it with their lives. The next leader, Yiftach, isn't going to be as kind. When they come to him and tell him, what'd you start a war without talking to me for? He's going to draw his sword and kill him. And they're going to pay for it with their lives. But Gideon was a patient leader. Gideon is traveling. He has 300 men. He comes to the Jewish town of Sukkot. And he says, give me some bread because my men are tired. And we're chasing after the final two kings of Midian. And the people of Sukkot tell him, who said you're going to win this war? We're not going to give you bread and endanger ourselves siding with you. And Gideon says, so I'm going to win this war, and then I'm going to come back and punish you. How could it be that a Jew turns his back on his brother? How could it be that I'm running in the middle of a war, and you're not willing to give me any bread for me and my men? I will punish the leaders of the city of Sukkot. And the same thing happens to him when he comes to the city of Penuel. And the people of Penuel say, you're never going to be able to punish us. You're never going to be able to touch us because we have a tower here. You can never take down the tower. And he says, no, when I finish this war, I'm going to come back and destroy the tower. And at this point, Gideon's 300 men have, on average, each killed 400 men because they've killed 120,000 soldiers. 300 killed 120,000. That means, on average, each one killed 400 men, right? Yes. So 300 men, each one on average killed 400. Because they already killed 120,000. What's left of the Midianite camp is 15,000 men. And they're on the run. And Gideon attacks. And they were unprepared for his attack. They didn't think he'd follow them. And he captures the two kings. And he's won the war. And he comes back. And he punishes the leaders of Sukkot, and he really destroys the tower of Penuel, and the people put up a fight, and he kills the people of Penuel, the Jews of Penuel. And we're going to pick up here. We're out of time. We'll pick up here with the conclusion of the story, Be'ez Hashem, next week.